So if I were to wrap this up, tie it with a bow, whatever, I guess I'd say my armor. It was never a distraction or a hobby. It was a cocoon. And now, I'm a changed man. You can take away my house, all my tricks and toys. One thing you can't take away? I am Iron Man.
I'm gonna do my big clap and you're gonna like it a lot.
You're gonna miss.
It's been a long week.
I know. The end of a long life. Hey, everybody, and welcome back once again to Podcast Part 3, the Part 3 Podcast, your best and brightest source for all things about movies that came after two other movies. As always, I am Sam.
And I am Will.
And we are taking it back, kind of for the first time, to, like, the true Marvel Cinematic Universe. We've dipped our toe, we've stepped on the web. We've gone safely through the Fox and Sony avenues into the MCU, but this is our first trip. We're taking it all the way back to 2013 to the seventh movie in the MCU out of what is now about to be 37 movies.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
It's like existentially nuts. Exhausting thinking
it's,
about it
that's
at this point.
Madness. We just talked about a franchise that's had now seven movies since 1993. This is 37 movies, to say nothing of TV shows, since 2008. That's, quality aside, that's an achievement of some sort.
Yeah, I think it surpassed Bond and Godzilla, right? At this point of how many entries in a franchise it can...
Oh, yeah. Definitely Bond. And certainly over a way shorter span of time.
Yeah, like, same with Godzilla, too.
Yeah, for sure. So, yeah, this is we're coming back to this because the MCU is still going strong here in 2025, and it's July, and it's superhero summer. We're talking to you on the day that Superman hits theaters, and DC's like, let's try this again. Let's see if we can get this going again. Call that one a mulligan. We're going to see if we can do this again with a little more color, a little more pop. And then, speaking of let's try this again, Fantastic Four.
Yes, the franchise that no one can ever can really crack.
just do it normal, people. we'll get to the Fantastic Four someday because they have yet to make it to a threequel. But speaking of brilliant scientist, explorer, industrialists from the Marvel Universe, we're talking about one of the legit threequels of the MCU because it's got a number 3 in it. We are talking about Iron Man 3. The Iron Man being he's the one that started it all. He's the man responsible for this whole mess.
And
we are going to do right by his threequel. We're going to do right by Shane Black, the co-writer and director of this, easily his best threequel. But that may be damning it with faint praise compared to The Predator.
Yes, we needed to do yeah, as you say, we needed to do right by Black because that the Predator is such a frustrating mess.
Here's the thing. To quote Shane Black, truthfully, the way to go about doing a part three, if you're ever in that position, as I'm lucky enough to be, is to find a way that the first two weren't done yet. You have to find a way to make sure that the story that's emerging is still ongoing, and by the time you finish three, will be something resembling the culmination of a trilogy. It's about, how has the story not yet been completely told? And I think we're getting there. I think we've really found ways to make this feel organic and new and based on what's come before, and that's what I'm happy about. That's Shane Black talking about Iron Man 3, not The Predator. And I would say, going off that quote, I'd say he succeeds with Iron Man 3. This was one of those movies that is both, when it came out, sort of at the height of Marvel. This is one of the first post-2012, post-Avengers movies that was both very divisive among fans and also made a fuck ton of money.
So much money.
This movie grossed $1.21 billion worldwide and was the second highest grossing movie of 2013.
Yeah. What was the...
Frozen.
Oh, of course.
You're not going to be... You ain't going to be frozen.
No one's going to be frozen.
Tony Stark got nothing on Anna and Elsa.
Yeah, and it's the first... The kickoff of Phase 2. So it's like they're really... It's Marvel kind of actually stretching their... stretching out and sort of feeling, figuring out what the MCU is and what it can do. I think Phase 2 is my favorite of all of them. Even it's the messiest of them all, but I think it's my favorite because it's the one with the most experimentation.
It's got it's definitely them at their most confident. It's got a few lows, I don't look at the six Phase 2 movies that went from 2013 to 2015, and none of them I'm like, oh god, what a fucking mess. It's Iron Man 3. It's Thor: The Dark World, which is a movie that's forgettable, but if you watch it again, you're like, this is fine. This is totally fine. It's a totally fine movie. Captain America: The Winter Soldier, which is like... That 2014 is the apex. You get Winter Soldier and Guardians of the Galaxy. Then you get Age of Ultron. Again, it's fine. It's fine. It's probably actually the worst movie of the six. And Ant-Man, which is like... The fact that Ant-Man was in development for like... before the MCU existed, it's a miracle it made it there at all.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, I mean, I think 2014 is really where they figured out what the Marvel formula is, because Winter Soldier and Guardians are the two movies that I think define the MCU going forward, even more than Avengers, I think.
Well, and they're confident right now. They're like, okay, we did it. We made it work. Like, we got over the hump, and Avengers happened, and it was a massive success. Now we feel a little more confident, and we can bring in some more out-there names. Like, this is when James Gunn came to the MCU, and we'll get to James Gunn in our next episode. Yeah. This is they brought in Shane Black. This is when the Russo brothers came on board. And, you know, those guys all had different impacts on the franchise going forward. And this was also, I think, very importantly, the point where they realized, okay, we pretty much have to do anything and everything to keep Robert Downey Jr. in this franchise.
Yes, exactly.
Well, let's go back to 2008. And 2008 is the beginning of not the current era of superhero movies, but the just before this era. 2008 is the year that Iron Man comes out. It's Marvel finally decides we've made enough shitty movies. We've farmed out our properties. We've had some success with X-Men and Spider-Man, but we've made some. There's been some real turds along the way. We just the Ghost Rider and Daredevil and so many Punishers. And so they decide, fuck this. We're gonna just finance these ourselves. We're gonna bring everyone back in house. And we're going to try to get this working. And unfortunately, they farmed out all their A-list properties. So you're not going to do this with Spider-Man. And you're not going to do this with Wolverine. You're going to do this with Iron Man, who is... No one younger than us remembers Iron Man before Robert Downey Jr. played the part. He's boring as shit.
He's the most B-lister of B-listers. And like his most... interesting story is where he has alcoholism.
We'll get to Demon in a Bottle in a minute. You know, it's one of those ones where fans are like, when are you going to do Demon in a Bottle? And the answer is never. Not really. And so Iron Man, the thing that made that movie work, besides just being a really well-made movie, and Jon Favreau just understands that material, and Marvel gave them a lot of trust, was they cast Robert Downey Jr., who was in the middle of his big comeback at this point, and because he'd done Kiss Kiss Bang Bang with Shane Black, he'd done Zodiac right before this, and like he just made that character come to life in a way that only happens now and then, especially in big blockbuster movies where you're like, okay, this character is eternally married to this actor for now and ever.
It's hard to overstate, I think, especially if you weren't alive or aware at the time, of just how important that he was, Downey Jr. coming in and bringing that energy to Iron Man, and the way that that movie is so confident in its tone and the way that it's telling its story, even though my understanding is the movie wasn't really made with like a real script and it was sort of like made up on the fly. And
I remember we went to did you go with me to the live commentary?
I wasn't able to go to that one with you guys.
You probably had an actual job. Yeah. But we went to Daniel, our friend Daniel, and I went to a live commentary because they didn't record a commentary for the DVD. So Jon Favreau and Robert Downey Jr. did a live commentary at the Arrow Theater for Iron Man. And they did basically talk about, like, the original script was very formulaic and very, like, it probably felt more in line with Raimi Spider-Man or, right, like, best case scenario, you're looking at a Batman Begins, where it just is, like checking off a lot of boxes, right, you know,
by the numbers origin story kind of.
And it's like, I think just Favreau and Downey kind of stripped the script to the studs and rebuilt it and gave it their own feel and their own like dialogue and just gave it an energy that really made the movie work. Because a lot of that movie is Robert Downey Jr. acting by himself.
Yeah.
Like the whole middle act is just him in a room talking to probably some guy just off camera, and later they cast Paul Bettany.
Yeah, or talking to the weird little grabby arm thingies.
Yes, yelling at various props.
Yeah, no, it's true. And then all the you know, heads up display stuff, all that kind of acting too, kind of mm-hmm, adds to,
for sure,
a lot of stuff adds to it.
And you go back and watch that one; it's a ton of practical work too.
Yeah,
like he's in a big old Power Ranger suit for a lot of that.
Yeah, Stan Winston did the suit, didn't they? I think
it's one of Stan Winston's last projects before he passed away.
That's
so,
right.
Yeah, that movie was a huge achievement. I want to say second or third highest grossing movie of 2008, behind Dark Knight and like right next to Crystal Skull.
Right.
And that got the ball rolling, because then after that, Marvel was like, guess what? Because at the end of that movie, you introduce Nick Fury and you tee up the Avengers, and Marvel's like, you think Iron Man is B-list? Guess who's coming next? You know?
It's like, it's, well, they did Iron Man 2 next, but then it's Thor.
Yeah, they were like, we're doing Captain America and we're doing Thor, and it's gonna work. But I think the thing they also realized with after Iron Man, and this is what made Thor and Captain America work, is this lives and dies by the charisma of its lead.
Right.
And like, maybe when we talk about Ragnarok at some point, we'll talk about Thor and how like Chris Hemsworth just made that part work. He cracked something in that, and it could have been so dour or felt like, I don't know, like the Jason Momoa Conan movie.
Or I mean, even, you know, it could have felt like the Dolph Lundgren He-Man movie, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, is kind of what that first Thor movie could have felt like without Hemsworth's charisma.
Yeah,
you
it's
know, pulling that movie along.
It's funny and earnest, and I'd say also Tom Hiddleston's charisma as well.
Well, yeah,
I don't think we
want to
write him off either.
Yeah,
but yeah, Iron Man 2 is, if Iron Man 1 is starting with a script that's got the structure but doesn't have the sauce yet, Iron Man 2 is a movie when they're just like, let's just do whatever. We can do whatever we want. We can make whatever movie we want. We're going to do sort of Demon in a Bottle. We're going to do sort of one of the villains you've never heard of, you know.
And we're going to sort of do, we're going to sort of set up a bunch of other movies. We're going to sort of do a bunch.
Yeah,
it's really busy
and it's a bit unfocused. I saw it recently and I don't dislike it as much as I did when it first came out, but it's just kind of unfocused.
Yeah.
And the whole middle act is just Tony Stark being, he's not supposed to be like the greatest human being ever. He is kind of a bag of shit even after he was redeemed. Like,
but he's really horrible in the middle of that movie.
He's pretty awful in that
movie. He's really bad. He's really not. And the movie doesn't really justify. It's not sort of like, oh, he's drinking a lot, so that's why he's being an asshole. It's sort of like, oh no, fame kind of got to his head. But
yeah,
that's what he was like before he had his accident.
And he's dying from like the poisoning from his mechanical heart. But then that just kind of gets resolved. And yeah, it's. It's an early warning for things that would later be big problems in the MCU, where a movie's trying to service a bunch of other movies and the villains aren't quite up to snuff. And I think they got over that, and then Captain America, Thor happened, Captain America happened, and the Avengers happened. Like, even with Iron Man 2, we still love Robert Downey Jr., and we still loved Iron Man, and we wanted right. more of that. So, exactly. you know, every franchise is going to have its weak spots. That's not, was certainly not a series kill. It also made a shit ton of money, so that's yeah. the point, or whatever. Like, what are we, why are we even analyzing it?
Yeah, but the thing that I think the early MCU really did, I mean, you know, you spoke to it already about it, basically creating movie stars overnight with their charisma, but it also made you be like, oh, I want to see these guys interact with each other. I want to see Thor talk to Captain America. I want to see Captain America interact with Iron Man. I want to see how this all, like, how they bounce off each other, because it was, their characters were so compelling.
Oh, yeah, and in the middle, in there, they made a Hulk movie, but we don't talk about that.
Oh, right, the Universal Hulk movie.
It's the prequel to Captain America Brave New World.
Yeah, yes.
Hey, I'm always happy to see Tim Blake Nelson in a movie. He's great. When am I getting Ty Burrell as Doc Samson?
I know. They should have brought him back. Bring them all back.
He should have been in She-Hulk.
He really should have. Yeah.
Totally should have been in She-Hulk. Yeah. Like that, he would have been perfect for that. So yeah, so you have the Avengers movie, and the first movie after that is Iron Man 3. And I think the thing they were like, this was like a real like, we got to make Robert Downey Jr. happy. We got to keep him involved. We got to keep this character alive, because now we're starting to formulate a long-term plan.
Yeah.
And I don't think they quite knew what they were doing yet, but by the end of Phase 2, they definitely had it figured out.
Yeah.
And so this is just kind of like Iron Man 3 is they went through some other potential directors. Jon Favreau decided not to come back and do this one. He stars in it, but he didn't want to be involved behind the scenes because he was working on Magic Kingdom at the time.
Oh, right. Yeah,
when, yeah. Which was going to be Night at the Museum, but it's the Magic Kingdom.
It's
but I think Tomorrowland might have put the damper on that.
I think you're right. I think Tomorrowland bombing made them go, no, we don't want to do projects based on the theme park, set in the theme park. I don't even know. I didn't see Tomorrowland, so I don't...
Tomorrowland is like, it's like baby's first Ayn Rand, kind of, because it's a Brad Bird movie. So this movie, I think Robert Downey Jr. reached out to Shane Black and brought Shane Black in, and he'd worked with Shane Black on Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. Shane Black is, you know, obviously super famous screenwriter and director from the 90s, worked on Predator, worked on Lethal Weapon, worked on The Long Kiss Goodnight. He's been around. He's like a... He's definitely got like a look and a feel to his movies that I remember being like, this is gonna be great for an Iron Man. And they were gonna, and the big hype is they're gonna finally do the Mandarin, Iron Man's only major villain that anyone knows. Iron Man has like Iron Man's like rogues gallery. This is the problem with the B tier in Marvel, is that their villains are all,
they're terrible.
They got one, each terrible. One's got one good one. You've got Loki, you've got Red Skull, and then it's Iron Man has the Mandarin, three or four evil industrialists, and three or four other guys in robot suits. That's it. That's all you've got. And the Mandarin is, he predates Ra's al Ghul, but he's not as good as Ra's al Ghul, and he's just kind of a weird, awkward Fu Manchu character that hasn't aged particularly well.
Yeah.
So they had Ben Kingsley, and if you go back and watch the trailers, there's so much B-roll of Ben Kingsley looking like an ominous supervillain in that. And I'm going to be honest, some people were really mad about that twist. I thought it was fantastic.
I think it rules. I didn't understand why people were so mad about it. I thought it was like, it was so brilliant. And what was so cool is that they kept that under wraps for so long until the movie came out. Like, no one really knew like what the deal was.
I didn't know it till the second time I saw it. Cause the first time, the first time I saw, I have a fondness. I don't know if fondness is the right word, but I have my special memory of Iron Man 3 is, it was the first and last time in a while that I went to a movie and had, right before going into the movie, partaken in an edible. I don't do it very often. And so I split a sugar cookie with a friend of ours. And I'm sitting in the arc light in the valley. And I'm feeling all right. I'm kind of sitting with my hands behind my head. Like, just real, like, you know, usual pose. And right about the point where he's given his address to the Mandarin, I just decided to stretch my arms, and I felt this ripple down my arms to my fingertips, and just as the torpedoes are hitting his house, immediate bad trip.
Oh, no.
Immediate.
Right.
I'm just like, I'm paranoid, and I'm my whole body is just sweaty, and I'm just like, oh no,
I don't want
I'm not
be
having
here.
A good time. No. I don't want to see his house blow up. And then the movie, between brief stints of me going to the bathroom and like splashing water on my face and looking at myself in the mirror for a long time, thinking I was going to die, even though I was just lightly high.
Right.
I kept going back in, and I have all these just vague, like, it was like coming in and out of the movie in different
right,
moments.
Right.
I'm like, why is he in a cowboy town now? What's happening?
Oh,
but
man.
I do remember the end, and I remember coming out of it being like, I think there was a good movie behind that bad trip. I'm gonna have to go back. And I went back and I really enjoyed it. But the first time I saw this movie was one of the most stressful experiences of my life.
Yeah, I don't know what I was doing, but I wasn't able to go with you guys when you all went to see.
You had a real job.
You
had a girlfriend who is now your wife. You were just like, you were secretly having a whole normal life.
I was doing something else, yeah.
You became an adult much earlier than the rest of us.
But no, I mean, it was so surprising that they were able to keep that twist under wraps, because it seemed like all the Marvel movies had all these leaks that kept coming out, and you'd sort of know what the story was, what the major beats were before the movie came out.
I think, well, part of it is that the reveal of who's behind it all is already established as a villain, so we knew Guy Pearce's character, Aldrich Killian, evil industrialist du jour, is the main bad guy. And so I think if there was something to leak, people wouldn't have necessarily pinpointed it.
Right.
But also, I wonder if this was one of those situations where Marvel was a little sheepish about the twist. I don't know if they were fully confident about it. Like, in hindsight, they clearly feel great about it, because Ben Kingsley keeps coming back to this franchise. He's in the Wonder Man series, like, which I love. But, I think they weren't – I don't know if they were, like – I have no evidence of this. I don't know if they were, like, 100% feeling this movie initially. I think they were probably more like, let's just do an Iron – we're going to do an Iron Man. We'll know it'll make money. We got to get to Captain America Winter Soldier, because that's the, like, real turning point. But I think it works, and I think it's and I know that like fans were like they ruined the Mandarin, like how could they do that? And it's like, you're not ruining the Mandarin, it's just this isn't the Mandarin.
Yeah, and
the Mandarin has come back.
You
got this and a movie with fucking Tony Leung in it, you know, calm down.
What I love about the twist though is that it's the movie is so Shane Black in its construction as like this overly complicated, weird mystery plot that sort of is not all that complicated once it's all laid out. But I do love that it is sort of this kind of satirical feeling where it's like, yeah, this industrialist created his own terrorist to like make money selling weapons.
Yeah, I think that totally works. I think that's great. I think maybe it was overkill at the end to have him like, have those dragon tattoos and be like, I am the Mandarin. That's like, maybe that was like one step too far. But I like the extremist stuff. I think they're using this terrorist as a front to cover up their exploding soldiers. And I think them slowly figuring that out's really cool. I like that Don Cheadle's a big part and it becomes a real like Shane Black buddy comedy in the third act, which is a lot of fun. And I like that it's a real character study of Tony Stark. Like, you think about before this movie, there was Avengers, and in Avengers, there's that exchange with him and Captain America, where Captain America's like, you don't know what it's like to lay down on a wire, let another man crawl over you. And Tony Stark says, I think I would just cut the wire.
Right.
And that's kind of his whole thing, is he's always looking for, like, he thinks he can just smart his way out of everything. And the franchise is always, the MCU was for a long time all about Tony Stark trying to either gets himself into a mess or gets the whole world into a mess. And he's got to, you know, genius his way out of it. He's, you know, He's not like it's a little bit of like Shatner in The Wrath of Khan, where he's too clever. He's too clever for the no win scenario. And this is, I think, one of those first ones where it's like, let's see what happens when we put Tony Stark behind the eight ball. He's got PTSD. He's having anxiety attacks. He loses all his suits, which he's been building as a coping mechanism, and strip him down to just who he is underneath.
I think it really works. And what it also does is, again, it sort of allows Shane Black to do his Shane Black thing. It's like it becomes just an 80s action movie.
Oh, like, yeah. When he's breaking in, he goes to the hardware store and makes all his exploding Christmas ornaments, Tony Stark. I fucking love that stuff.
It's so great. It's so
great. I remember people at the time were mad, like, oh, he saves everyone on Air Force One, but he's not actually flying the suit. I'm like, of course he's not. That's totally what he would do.
And there was like a good chunk of the comics where he never got in the suit. He was controlling Iron Man behind a chair. I think he may have been like paralyzed at the
time.
Yeah,
I think, but still, the fact is, the reason his death in Endgame felt so impactful was the first time that Tony Stark actually was like, there's no other way out of this.
Yeah.
I'm Iron Man. This is what I do. Like, this is really what it means to be Iron Man.
I adore this movie. It's got, you know, flaws. It's not...
Yeah, it's not perfect. It's got some pacing issues. Yeah.
Its tone is a little funky at the beginning. It takes a little bit to sort of find its feet, I think.
Yeah.
You know, it's like it starts off a little more somber than I think it should be and kind of ramps up into more of the comedic, you know.
It's servicing a lot of characters. So certain people get short. Like Rebecca Hall, who Maya Hansen was supposed to be the main villain at one point. Right. And the studio, I think, balked at having a female villain behind it all because of toy sales.
Right.
I don't know how many Guy Pearce toys they were selling. But
that was always so funny. It's like, what are you talking about? How many Guy Pearce action figures were you selling?
How many Guy Pearce action figures were sold for Iron Man 3? And then what percentage of those were just sold to hobbyists who are going to customize them into Leonard Shelby from Memento action figures?
Exactly.
Where it just says, like, remember Sammy Jankis on his chest.
Yeah, Rebecca Hall she's there and important and then vanishes from the movie.
Like, she's great, but she's done a little dirty.
Yeah.
So, and, you know, they do a good old-fashioned status quo backpedal where, you know, like, Pepper gets superpowers, but then she doesn't, you know.
Yeah.
I kind of wish they'd rolled with that further, but I'm sure if they didn't know if they were going to always have Robert Downey Jr., I think they were certain they wouldn't always have Gwyneth Paltrow.
Yeah, I think that there is at the very end of this movie, it's very clear that they were not certain Robert Downey Jr. was going to come back. I think that seems to me because Avengers Age of Ultron kind of negates the ending of this movie a little bit, don't you think? Like,
yeah, a little bit. He's still... I think it's just that he can't help himself.
Right.
He cannot stop, you know, building a suit of armor in one form or another. He cannot stop tinkering. I think it's that he learns he doesn't need to build Iron Man suits, but he immediately pivots to something else. I think it's just this is a guy who is he was destroying the world with his weapons for years, and now he's trying to save the world with his weapons. It's like he doesn't quite ever get it, you know, until, because everything he does is wildly irresponsible throughout the MCU up until pretty much the moment he sacrifices himself. He puts a 15-year-old boy in mortal danger on multiple occasions.
Yes. Yeah, that's true. That is true. But no, I mean, it does feel... Don't you... I mean, you think the end of this movie feels like, well, maybe we're done with Robert Downey Jr.
Well, Age of Ultron's the same way. Like, he leaves and it's this whole new lineup of Avengers.
Right. Yeah. And then they brought him back because they paid him a ton of money for
Dump trucks they rolled up for Civil War, I guarantee you. Like,
I mean,
because remember the Comic-Con twist for Civil War where it was announced as Serpent Society?
Right, right.
And then Robert Downey Jr. came out and like, no, change this. I'm the bad guy. Like, people were just like freaking out, and I was just like, "Have you read this comic?" This is
not a good comic.
You want to be Mark Millar, but without his edge, you know?
Yeah. It's like Mark Millar with handcuffs, which Mark Millar's not very good anyway, but neutering him.
It needs a certain person to understand Mark Millar's material.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people love Civil War, and I'm not a huge fan of it.
The movie or the comic book?
The movie.
I like Civil War well enough. I think it, again, sort of, it has the bigger Marvel MCU problems where it's trying to service too many different things all at once, and it can't sort of focus.
It's a mini Avengers movie, essentially. Yeah. It kind of loses focus on Captain America at a certain point.
Yeah, I mean, Cap and Bucky should be the focus of that movie, and they kind of get pulled into the patina of all these.
I always forget that's like how they introduce Black Panther into the MCU as he shows up in Civil War. There's a lot going on in that movie. That movie's so funny to me because the whole conceit of the first act is the government is terrified of the Scarlet Witch. Like, she blew up half a building. She's a risk. You keep her in lockdown. But that sentient AI-powered robot that can go through walls, he's fine. He can hang. Are we not concerned about the man with the Infinity Gem in his forehead?
No. Yeah, I mean, that's... that would be Phase 3. Is that what Civil War is? Yeah,
I think so. I think Civil War is Phase 3. I lose track of where the dividing lines are because I also have to like factor in all those various Spider-Mans that are peppered in there.
Right, yeah.
Phase 3 is... Civil War is the first one. Then Doctor Strange, Guardians 2, Spider-Man Homecoming, Ragnarok, Black Panther, Infinity War, and then the rest of the Ant-Man and the Wasp, Captain Marvel, Endgame, and Spider-Man Far From Home. And that's the end of Phase 2.
Right. Or Phase 3. Phase 3.
And that's the end of the Infinity Saga.
Right. I mean, the run of like Ragnarok, Black Panther, Infinity War, Endgame is pretty great, I think. I think that's sort of the
high. It's just a testament to how well-oiled a machine they were building up to Endgame, and what a monumental achievement Endgame felt like as the conclusion of this. It's not the best one by any means, but it's like it felt everything in Endgame, a movie that the last hour of which is almost entirely fan service, felt so earned in 20, and that was, it's crazy that was 6 years ago now. Like,
Yeah,
because then it just everything after that for like for 5 years, all of it felt like it was just Marvel running in place. Like they were like setting up all these new characters, but there was no thing. No, it didn't feel like they were building to anything.
Yeah, it did. It felt like there was no plan, which isn't necessarily a problem, but it just sort of felt like it was just like you were saying, they were like just throwing darts at a wall.
Well, they were doing the they've been doing the multiverse, but they weren't like the multiverse wasn't like, I mean, they were spread out over TV. They had so many new characters. You'd really lost a lot of the characters you wanted to latch on to in the past, and the multiverse was there and we saw it in a bunch of movies, but it wasn't building to something.
And it wasn't also like compelling as like a concept because they weren't really exploring it in any real sense. It wasn't like Spider-Verse where it was like, oh, here's a whole bunch of different characters that can bounce off of each other. It was like, well, here's a sort of a different version of Earth. There you go. Yay.
Yeah. it works in No Way Home for Spider-Man, but it's still like it's not the thing that movie's about per se.
Right. Yeah. I mean, and I mean, like No Way Home, I think works, but like you said, it's not really like the multiverse isn't a focus. And then Multiverse of Madness, which a movie I had a lot of fun with, but it's not really about the multiverse, like in any real sense.
No, it's, and then like there's just movies in there that feel like they're not, the people making them are kind of not invested anymore, like, which I'm just talking about Love and Thunder, but but like you, just these movies where it just gets more and more messy, and this is the time where we're starting to really see the seams on the production level, all the effects stuff where these effects crews are being just worked to the bone day and night, and it's showing, and it's just the movies aren't making enough money, and it's just, you can tell that they're, and they were also, they had a few things that were beyond their control. I have a feeling that Chadwick Boseman was going to be a much bigger part of this franchise 100%. Before he passed away. Yeah. And they were building to Kang as a villain. And on one level, I was like, I constantly had to look up what Kang's deal was. Right. I mix Kang up with like the Wizard and the High Evolutionary and the Mad Thinker and all of those like just like B-tier Thanos villains.
Right, right.
And the whole, like what they're doing now, I don't know what Doomsday is going to be like, but yeah, if you can't do if you're not going to bring back the Red Skull and you're not going to use Magneto, it's Doctor Doom.
It's
got to be Doctor Doom. That's the thing is, people forget they really ran this whole operation without the biggest Marvel villains for a long time because they didn't have the Spider-Man villains. The Red Skull was kind of one and done.
Yeah.
They didn't have access to Magneto or Doctor Doom. Like it's kind of like the fact that they got Loki to work, but unfortunately they did him too well. He was too charming and he became a hero.
Yeah, that is the problem.
But this is the thing with the MCU, and I think this comes to bring it back to Iron Man 3. The MCU works best when it's not afraid to sit in its characters a bit and learn a bit about them, let them function on their own. This is why Thanos worked. This is why Loki works. This is why Captain America works. It's why Spider-Man has always worked. It is put them on the back foot, figure out what they would do as people, what motivates them, and just if you're doing that well enough, you can ignore the bad faith arguments that people make of like, why didn't Tony Stark call Thor? Like, you know, to give him a lift, you know, like it's that's not what this is about.
Yeah, no, I mean, no, you're absolutely right. And I think what Shane Black does really well in, you know, like The Nice Guys and Kiss Kiss Bang Bang is get his characters sort of stripped down to the core and watch them, see what makes them tick, and watch them work through their problems and figure out how to solve it in, you know,
it's
creative and inventive
his
ways.
Movies are all about just two to five guys holding each other accountable, you know?
Yeah.
It's like if little Harley and Rhodey are going to hold Tony Stark accountable. Tony Stark's going to hold them accountable. Yeah. Riggs and Murtaugh hold each other accountable.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Is going to come to Earth and remind Arnold Schwarzenegger he's not immortal. And it's time for him to get back to basics.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's... I think you're right, and it's... It was impressive at the time, and I think it's impressive looking back on it now, that Marvel did let Shane Black do Shane Black stuff. I mean, they have not always been sort of that.
No,
like,
I think, and I think the fact that this movie made $1.2 billion gave them the confidence to let other directors do that. Like, they let Taika Waititi make a Taika Waititi movie. They let James Gunn make a trilogy of movies that is so utterly James Gunn.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's worked out so far for everyone involved. You know, we're saying this as Superman's drawn in, you know, probably a nice big fat opening weekend.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's pretty good to boot, you know.
Yeah. I mean, that's not too shabby either, making a good Superman movie after some, I will say mediocre, because I like two-thirds of Man of Steel and maybe two-thirds of Batman v Superman.
I will say
The
thing I've thought about is that the thing that's the saving grace of all theatrical and TV Superman properties, for that matter, is that they've never miscast Superman.
Yeah.
I mean, Christopher Reeve, obviously. He's just still the gold standard. Brandon Routh's pretty good. Henry Cavill's pretty good. David Corenswet's really good. I really liked him in that movie.
Yeah.
And the TV guys have all been great. Like, George Reeves looks like what you want from a 1950s Superman. Dean Cain, Tyler Hoechlin, all these guys. I think they've always nailed the casting of Superman in a way they haven't with some other heroes. Like, not every Batman's been right for Batman, you know?
George Clooney.
No, nothing personal. George Clooney. He knows.
Yeah, he knows.
I like that the DCEU ends with being damned to have the George Clooney Batman forever and ever.
Oh my god, that's true. It's just
so weird. It's so weird.
Strange
it has nothing
choice.
To do with Iron Man 3, but that no. movie, The Flash, like
it's a baffling movie.
It's so weird. Like it's got all the problems of a major blockbuster now. Like it's everyone was shot separately from each other, and no one's there, and a lot of the actors don't know what they're acting against, and the effects are just like. And it just makes some real ghoulish choices, like George Reeves trapped on a zoetrope playing Superman in a loop for all eternity is the grimmest shit I have ever seen in a superhero movie.
Or just, you know, and having Christopher Reeves and what's her name?
Helen Slater
standing next to each other. It's like it is.
I mean, I guess they were in the same universe.
But then
I think it's just Christopher Reeve was off world at the time.
and having Nicolas Cage there fighting. It's like this
a movie that never got made. A scene from a script that wasn't even the shooting script. The whole joke is that was a stupid idea. Also, we're talking about Superman's. This movie was supposed to be about the Flash.
Yeah. That movie goes off the rails. There's parts of it that I think are kind of fun and funny.
It's got some of the best Ben Affleck stuff as Batman.
Yeah,
His last scene is actually like really poignant, where he talks about how like you don't try to change the past. You can't do that. You can't change it.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, God, Ben Affleck, you're these movies did not deserve you.
They really didn't. I mean, like I say, I think Batman v Superman is an interesting failure. I think it spends the middle of its runtime just running in place and doing nothing.
I think this is kind of why the new Superman is being so well received, is that it's one thing for Batman, but I think really people do want to see a Superman who likes his job.
Yeah.
Like just like that is, it doesn't mind having to save all the people.
Yeah. And enjoys saving people.
He actually likes going to work every day.
Yeah, I mean, I think the operatic, mythic, you know, this is the man with a world on his shoulders thing, it doesn't really work for Superman. And also, it just leads to a lot of belabored Jesus metaphors, which I really like that the new movie sort of was like, no, we're not doing that.
He doesn't need to be a metaphor for
Jesus.
He's Superman. He's
exactly.
He's, to quote John Lennon, he's bigger than Jesus. There are three infallible man gods in pop culture that rule over. There's Jesus, there's Superman, and there's Santa Claus. Those are the only ones. They don't need to be compared to anyone else because they're the top of the mountain.
Exactly. Exactly.
And they should team up.
They really should. There's got to be a Superman meets Santa Claus comic book, right?
There's got to be a holiday guys team up, right? Does that not exist?
Well, there's the DreamWorks movie Guardians of the whatever.
Yeah,
that
but
is.
I don't want it to be like a fun twist. I don't want like Red Guardian version of Santa Claus. I want Santa. I want the Easter Bunny, and I want Jesus.
Just stop and cry.
And Judah Maccabee to team up.
And Judah Maccabee has to be sorry. Brain fart.
What?
I don't know. Cut that out.
You couldn't think of a Jewish actor?
No, I was
Tevye?
Yeah. No.
Sandy Koufax?
No, I was trying to. I don't know what I was doing. I don't know. Anyway, cut that all out.
That was okay.
My brain just exploded. It's been a long week. Anyway, can we talk about how awesome Ben Kingsley is in this movie?
Oh my god, he's so good.
he's so good.
Like, just like, you can. How could you complain about the twist with the Mandarin when you got just him like, bloody hell, bloody hell. just drug addicted soccer hooligan Ben Kingsley. It's amazing.
Oh my god. The one quote that jumped out at me, it's like, so they made you get clean? No, they gave me more drugs. They said they'd get you off of them? No, they gave me more.
Yeah. A lovely speedboat.
Also, I think Shane Black should write a movie called, like, Thugs or, like, Goons or something, because I love the way that he writes, like, just the random mooks who are, like,
oh, my God, yes. And this has got my favorite moment in the whole MCU with that guy that's just... the sequence where, like, Tony Stark's been captured and bit by bit his suit is blasting through and, like, getting to him, so he's got, like, one hand and one foot and a machine gun, and he kills a bunch of guys, and then the last guy's like, honestly, I hate working here. These guys are so weird.
So weird. It's so great. Makes me laugh every time.
I love henchmen, because these guys are just for hire. They're not true believers. It's like Bond henchmen.
Yeah, and I love the two guys who are, like, he's chained up in the suit as he's waiting, like, and he keeps, like, come on! And they're, yeah. like, just, like, I love those two doofs.
Yeah, no, Shane Black's always very good at his, like, feature, like, supporting characters for a single scene. Let's talk about presidents.
Bill Sadler.
Bill Sadler's in this movie. And you know that the one guy from RoboCop that's in the movie is not to be trusted.
Yeah, I think that's one of those elements that sort of, like, I wish they had explored more. Miguel Ferrer is so great.
He's no longer with us, but little Jenna Ortega could come back. That was his... Jenna Ortega.
That's
like
Ortega.
Baby Jenna Ortega.
Yeah.
I was like, Wednesday Adams. No, so I was looking it up because I was like, all right, what's the order of presidents in the Marvel Universe? And did you know that Donald Trump was president in the MCU?
What? When?
So it goes like this. And I think you have the Netflix shows to thank for this because they're trying to be, like, more set in the real world. So they reference right. Obama and Trump and things.
Right.
Obama was president, but he either didn't run or lost the election to President Ellis, William Sadler,
right.
who was then president until 2016 when Donald Trump becomes president. Donald Trump was president during the snap.
Oh, my God.
And now we don't know if he got snapped or what, but right. then after him is President Ritson, played by Dermot Mulroney, from Secret Invasion.
Okay.
And then that leads to President Ross in the new one, in Captain America Brave New World.
What
happened in 2016, like, when they were just like, okay, we live in a world of superheroes and stuff. Maybe people just were like, oh, does it really matter who's president anymore?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you're not going to actually have the president as a character, it really doesn't matter. But
yeah, unless in the Marvel Universe, usually the president is just our actual president. And I think
right.
it's in the DC Universe, it's usually a fictional character. Like Lex
right.
Luthor was president for a long
right.
time.
Yeah, I remember, maybe it's Civil War, Bush shows up, right? Is it Civil War or
yeah,
somewhere,
I think
some
it's,
comic
it's,
books around there?
It's prior to Obama, it's confirmed that Bush, Clinton, and everyone up past Carter is legit, and they've confirmed, I think, in, like, other stuff, Kennedy was president, FDR was obviously
right.
president, Eisenhower was president. They just haven't, like, no one's overtly said, like, well, when I met Nixon, you know.
Well, and then I do remember around the time of the death of Superman that Bill Clinton shows up in a bunch of those comics.
It's so weird when the president, like, when Spider-Man met Obama.
Yeah,
like,
it's, I don't, it's
or
always...
in Ultimate X-Men where he's like, it's like Magneto shows up and, like, strips George W. Bush naked and
right.
throws him on the White House lawn.
Yeah, it's always a little weird and a little too, like, kooky. I don't
it's
know.
Just, it's like, I don't know. It's.
It feels too cute, I think.
You know what it is? It's hard for me to take our real, legit world leaders seriously when they're facing Magneto, you know?
Yeah.
The guy with the actual nuclear codes. I'm like, you're not. You're a cartoon character, sir. That's Surian McKellen. That's Eric Lenscher. I think it also was probably like every electoral cycle, they just begged Steve Rogers to run for president and he would refuse.
Probably. Like, come on, Cap.
Come on, Cap, do it. Tony Stark's like, do it, man, or I'll do it.
Yeah. I'm surprised there hasn't been like a comic book run where he runs for president. There probably was.
I think Red Skull became president for a hot second as well.
Didn't Norman Osborn become president too?
He became mayor of New York at least.
Oh, okay. That's what I'm thinking of.
And like, so did J. Jonah Jameson at one point or another. And I think Wilson Fisk has been mayor of New York.
Yes. Have you watched Daredevil Born Again yet?
I have not. No, I mean, I have not. I haven't watched Ironheart. This is sad. The sad thing is I'm old now and I have a child. And sadly, the MCU is just not appointment viewing like it used to be. Like, I didn't see Thunderbolts in theater. I didn't see Brave New World in theaters. And, you know, I've seen them since, and I like Thunderbolts a lot. Like, yeah. That one was really fun. Fantastic Four, it's like, I'll try to see it, but I can't promise I'm going to see it. It's not like a must-see thing.
Yeah.
It's also just like, when the first Iron Man came out, it would literally be like, we got to get everyone coordinated and show up at the theater at a certain time because seats weren't reserved in advance.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think the MCU machine has become too machine-y for me. Although I felt like Thunderbolts didn't feel like that. But
I'm choosing to believe that they're starting to like clear out the pipes a little bit.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe that's wishful thinking on my part, but like, I feel like, look, they did the one thing they know will always work. They drove a fucking like ocean liner of money to Robert Downey Jr.'s house and said, will you please come back as some character? Pick a character.
Pick
any
one.
Character.
We don't care.
You want to be the Black Cat? Come back. You want to be Gray Gargoyle? Come back. You want to be the Hypno Hustler? We don't care. We need you to be in this franchise. You are one get out of jail free card.
I want to see Robert Downey Jr. as Stilt Man.
It's a crime that Stilt Man has still not made it into the MCU.
Right?
He should have been. The fact that Thor and Spider-Man and the Hulk all got in before Stilt Man is still one of the great cinematic travesties. Well, we don't know who the villain is in the next Spider-Man next year.
That's true. We could get Stilt Man. We could
get it trending, people. Hashtag
hashtag bring Stilt Man into
hashtag
the MCU.
Stilt Man or we burn this theater to the ground.
Stilt Man MCU. I want a shirt. That's what I want, a shirt. Stilt Man in the MCU 2029.
Stand tall for Stilt Man.
There you go.
I'll get to work. You can find it on the podcast part 3 Etsy that I have not made yet.
There you go.
Over on TeePublic.
And and then what other shirts could we make? We could get a shirt with a guest with the butler from Spider-Man 3.
You just mean other part 3 things.
Yeah,
I'm like,
other part
there was
three
a that
shirts.
Was a line in Iron.
No, I'm just thinking.
Oh no, I mean there'd definitely be like just our Mount Rushmore of like Connell Cochran and Pantsuit Gilman. You know, just those two. Those are the only two. We don't need four. We need to do like a March Madness bracket of all the movies we've done, because we've done 60 fucking movies at this point. We need to whittle this down. Like, what is the best part 3? And in fact, I'm doing it today. I have not consulted Will on this, folks. This is happening live. I am blindsiding him. Will, how would you rate Iron Man 3 as a threequel on a scale of 1 to 3? The new official podcast part 3 rating system, 1 to 3.
I like it. I think I would
no
put this
fucking
on
around with a 7 out of 10. 1, 2, or 3.
I think I'd put this as a 3. I think this is one of the best ones we've done.
I would.
Don't you
I would
think?
Agree. This as, yeah. as certainly as a threequel,
yeah.
exploring the character, going deeper, looking into their past, look at setting them up for a future or giving them some sort of closure. Absolutely. This is a 3. 100%.
Yeah. I mean, I think this is one of the best ones we've covered. And I love Shane Black so much and I love what he does. But I love the Mandarin twist. I think that is like, it is so fun. And I think it is so clever.
I love the MCU when it's humming, when it's feeling confident about itself, when it's feeling good, and it hasn't had that confidence very much lately.
Yeah, it really hasn't.
Which is to say, which is why, I mean, I guess we'll to segue now, in our next episode, we're going to do another superhero movie for July. And in honor of James Gunn heading up the new DC universe, and he's got Superman out, we're going to do Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, which is a latter-day MCU movie, but I think a really confident one.
Yeah.
It's a rare gem in the post-Endgame pantheon of the MCU.
Yeah. No, I mean, and I'm excited to revisit this because I only watched it, saw it once in the theater, and I liked it, but
I'm not, because it's got so much animal abuse in it and it stresses me out. But
that's true. Now that I say that, it's a bummer of a movie from what I remember.
It's so dark.
It's really
sad, which I think works for the movie. Like, yeah. Speaking of, we talked about like wishy-washy weak villains.
Yeah.
There is something that to be said about a villain who is just a bad person,
yeah.
Like just a piece of shit. Like, and I think that movie accomplishes that to a T.
And that's kind of like James Gunn's MO now, because like you look at the bad guy in Lex Luthor in Superman. He's
sure.
Like not like other Luthors that are kind of like, oh,
he always has at least one villain who is just irredeemably awful, like Peacemaker's dad, or like the general in the Suicide Squad, things like that.
Yeah. Or Star-Lord's dad, even in Guardians.
Well, Star-Lord's dad has a lot going on. There's a lot going on in that movie.
Yeah, we can talk about it. That one, I mean, I like that movie, but it's trying to service too many characters.
That movie asks you to make a massive in-the-moment retcon of a relationship from the first movie, and we'll go into it next time we talk about it. But if you just roll with that, if you yes and, or just go fine, the movie works a lot better. But it's a very busy movie, and Guardians 3 has a lot going on in it, but I think it's a movie that's like it so knows its characters and it knows the story it wants to tell, and it's also confident enough to be like, we're gonna make a character that never should have worked the lead. You know, we did it.
Yeah. I mean, the Guardians movies are sort of the minor miracle of the MCU, I think. And
well, that was the first one came out not long after Iron Man 3, and it was really like, okay, you guys liked Avengers, huh? You want something real weird? You want some weird, silly shit? And I was like, yes, because I was a fucking Guardian fan.
Yeah.
I was a huge Dan Abnett and Andy Lanning fan. Like,
I
that
remember,
era of Guardians, the post-Annihilation stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, give me a Nihilus. When am I getting a Nihilus?
Yeah, they need to get back into, like, the cosmic stuff.
Well, I think they gotta
sort out
the Fantastic Four, and they're gonna reset the whole table after Secret Wars, and we'll see where we're at. And I guess that's all we really need to say about Guardians 3. So next week we're doing Venom the Last Dance.
Our summer of superheroes continues.
You gotta strike the Sony Spider-Man universe while the iron is cold.
I mean, I think it's the only part 3 they've gotten to other than the Spider-Man movies.
Yes.
Morbius certainly isn't
unless
getting
you
a part
think of
three.
Unless you think of Morbius, Madame Web, and Kraven as their own trilogy.
Oh man, no, I do not. I do not. I don't want to watch those movies, Sam.
No, we're watching Guardians 3. I did think of a weird. We haven't. This has nothing to do with superheroes, really, but we haven't done another director's thematic trilogy in a long time, and I have a really weird one in mind. I'm not going to say who it is, what it is yet. You've seen at least one of these movies, and it's a very strange one, but I feel like I want to talk about them, because there's something to unpack there. And I'll tell you when we get off, and I don't want to spoil it for people in case you also hear this idea and tell me you don't want to be friends anymore. So,
all right.
But yes, Iron Man 3, awesome movie, so much fun. I know it's not for everybody, but that's kind of its part of its charm. Not every Marvel movie has to be for everyone. I think that's the mistake they make sometimes, is that it's like the comics. Yeah, you might read the Avengers crossovers, but you're not reading every single character's solo run. And if you like the Robert Downey Jr. Iron Man, this is him. This is his movie.
Yeah, 100%. And if you like Shane Black, it's
For sure. It's a high watermark for Shane Black. It didn't get fiddled with like the Predator.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. But Will, this was fun. I'm looking forward to Guardians. Yeah. And it's I'm looking for I saw Superman. I thought it was pretty great. I had a good time. Too. It's a lot going on in that movie, but I think it was really fun. It was really confident. And I'm interested to see how Fantastic Four goes.
Yeah, I'm intrigued. I don't I can't say I'm excited, but I'm intrigued.
I'm not like a huge Fantastic Four fan.
Yeah, I'm not either. I mean, I like them. Evan, my son, is really into the Fantastic Four. He really loves all of them. I don't know. But
is this just me, or like, why is the Thing always tiny? Like, he's so little in this movie.
Yeah,
he
was little. He was little in the.
I guess he's not all. Maybe in the original like run, he was a smaller dude, but like. I don't know.
Maybe they didn't want another Hulk. I don't know. Maybe they just didn't want to have like another Hulk running around. Like a, they didn't
wouldn't
want
to
get confused.
Give yourself the option for the Thing to fight the Hulk at some point?
I mean, I would, but I don't know. Maybe that was the thought. Or maybe they the thinking is that he'll get bigger. I don't know. Or maybe he'll lose all his rock powers, like in the original Secret Wars miniseries.
Or maybe we're going to see a completely different Fantastic Four at some point, because I don't think this is... I don't think they're done casting Dr. Doom. Let's just leave it at that.
Yeah.
Anyway, folks, this was thank you for tuning in. Join us next time for Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. Don't forget to like, subscribe, check us out. We're usually over on Instagram. Maybe we got a Twitch or something now. I don't know. And Will, always a delight. Always a pleasure.
Always fun, Sam. Anytime.
Anytime. Anytime.
Anytime.
Anytime. That's Shane Black was in that movie.
You know, connect.
He talks a lot about his wife's capacious reproductive organs.
Yes, he does. That's like all he does, and then he dies.
It's really all he does. He certainly makes an impression before he departs. He tells two of the worst jokes on the face of God's green earth. Gets one laugh, to be fair.
It's a big laugh.
Billy thinks it's hilarious, and the Predator thinks it's hilarious. And then he dies. I do love the making of Predator, because it was literally, they were like, yeah, we cast Shane, and then we just kind of like made him rewrite the script on set. That's why he was in the movie so much.
Yeah. And he was like, I don't want to do this. All right, I'll do it, but I have to be in it.
And I want to tell terrible jokes.
Really bad jokes.
Go check out Predator, folks. And then check out Iron Man 3. Both great.
Good night.
Good night, everybody.